I'm going to go right into our next speaker, all the way from Cree territory in what some people call Alberta, Sheldon Sunshine, who's the chief of the Sturgeon Lake Cree Nation. So welcome.
Tantse kakawayak. Gnaskman Simantuan Itskagisagak. I said good morning. Thank the Creator for giving us a beautiful day. Thank you for having me. Thank you for that introduction. I'm a little nervous for some reason.
We love you.
Thank you. I had prepared some things, but I think I'm just going to speak from my heart here. I'm just going to use it as a guide to make sure that I cover every point. A little bit about myself. Like I said, I'm Sheldon Sunshine, Chief of Sturgeon Lake Cree Nation in Treaty 8 territory, Northern Alberta, approximately 3.5 hours northwest of Edmonton. And so some of the challenges that we face are significant when it comes to the resource development in our territory. The AI data center is one that has raised significant concerns. There are others. We got the traditional oil and gas developments. We got forestry. We got the whole gamut. And then we have talks of nuclear in and around the north of us. We got a lithium deposit that's just outside the border of our reserve up to White Court. They're talking about a 20-year life cycle for that when they harvest it. And then also the West Coast pipeline that they're proposing. So, you know, a lot of demand is going to be put on our water and our resources. And one of the things that we find that the governments are talking about their resources and their riches and everything that comes out of it. I think that's one thing that I want to speak today about is our treaty and our understanding of what that meant to us and what it means to us today and how all of these developments impact our relationship with the federal government and the governments and people in general. You know, I think with the separatist question that came out yesterday and the battles that we've been having within that whole conversation it all relates to resource development, you know, and that's what the big fight over is. It's a fight over land and access to the resources. And one of the understandings from our people passed down by generations is that we agreed to share these lands and allow colonization with the understanding that we're going to share in the benefits of the lands. And for First Nations, we haven't seen that. I'm not too sure if, maybe you should give me a show of hands if you have an understanding of what the treaty is. Okay. And that's less than half. And so when we're talking about relationships and understandings at the time of signing a treaty, our people were basically coerced to signing this treaty, but we agreed to. Because our ancestors had seen what was coming, that the colonization was going to happen. And so they made sure that we had these understandings at the time. And yet, when the treaty was signed, history favors the one who documents it. And so with the treaty text, all we've been seeing in the social media and the news is that First Nations ceded and surrendered our territories. And that's not truth. That's not the understanding that we had at the time. It was to share the land, like I said. And we haven't seen that. There was a study done by an economist named Mark Nalski in 2022 by the Chiefs of Treaty 8 organization where they did an analysis from 1930 to the current date on the amount of resource development in oil and gas. And at that time, it was estimated around $2 trillion. And when they showed the what was brought back to First Nations, it was minimal. Like, we're talking hundreds of thousands, million, low millions. And, you know, those things create the disparity in our communities. You know, we deal with poverty, we deal with lack of housing, lack of jobs, lack of all those things. And there's a misunderstanding that the general public has, is that we're all taken care of by the feds. And that is far from the truth. You know, I'd welcome anybody to come visit our community and see exactly what we do deal with on a day-to-day basis. And should the understanding change, and, you know, that's one of the conversations that we have with the province and the feds, is having that understanding and that relationship building so that we can get back to the basics. One of the conversations that we have is, who is the original people of these lands? No, it's First Nations. And, you know, with those lack of understanding, it's not a lack of understanding. It's a refusal to accept that understanding from these governments. And so I think I'm going on a tangent, and I apologize. But just to give you an understanding where I come from. I come from, in Sturgeon Lake Cree Nation, we've been very vocal protecting our treaty, because part of our understanding is that this agreement was to last as long as the sun shines, the grass grows, and the waters flow. And basically that's forever. And what we're seeing today with the development in our territory and the governments that we have in the province of Alberta, and even the feds with Bill C-5, is that they're gonna fast track resource development. And we've seen that. You know, with this AI data center, we've seen that there is not enough regulations to protect anything. We've seen the government of Alberta not require an environmental impact assessment on this project. And to us, that raised significant concerns, you know, with the water and the amount of gas, the amount of emissions that those generators are going to produce, the amount of heat that's going to be in that territory. It's going to create havoc in our territory. And so that's why I agreed to come here, and I thank you, Drew, for the invite, just so we could speak to those things, so that you could have an understanding where we're coming from. We're not against development. It may seem that way in media. We will be okay with responsible development. You know, we've seen what happened in Mikisew. I'm not sure if you're all familiar with what happened in Mikisew and what they're dealing with today as a result of what they call responsible development. You know, they're dealing with high cancer rates in their community, and the government of Alberta is rejecting their findings. So, you know, and those are the things that I'm worried about in our community, because, like I said, we have all of this development in our territory, the proposed development, which are going to have significant impacts. The typical oil and gas developments day to day that we deal with are significant. You know, on a weekly basis, we get maybe 100 dispositions for traditional oil and gas developments. You know, when we're doing that estimate on the oil and gas activity, and then the $2 trillion, we're not talking about mining, we're not talking about forestry. Like, all of those things have to be combined in the cumulative impacts that we're facing in our territories. And so when we have the rising cost that we're all experiencing, we experience that too, and maybe more so because of the lack of resources that we have. You know, in Sturgeon, we're doing a lot of great things in terms of regaining our jurisdiction under child welfare. Our economic development arm is doing great things. We've increased the jobless rate. Reduced the jobless rate and increased the opportunities. But yet we're still dealing with those systematic issues. And so we're going to get back on track on here. Apologize. So some of these developments and how they impact treaty rights. It is through those processes, the AER, Alberta regulatory process, the Alberta consultation process, which we're finding significant challenges. You know, like I said, we're a little progressive when we're taking a stronger stance in development in our territory. We filed statements of concerns. And we're going to start filing judicial reviews on some of these projects, and just so that the government has a little more accountability, because right now there is none. You know, and we're seeing that with this massive data center. If it was one unit, it might be, if it was done responsibly, but we're talking 11, 12 units with each with power generation plants. You know, it is such a massive project. They're facing the same thing in Utah. The same guy, the same development, and it's getting pushed through because government wants it. They see all the benefits, but when at the end of the day, it's the people on the ground and the territories that are going to face these impacts, and that they're going to pay the price. You know, they're talking about tax concessions and all of those things. So really, that's the people who are going to be paying for that. And really, we don't really have a say. You know, there's going to be some open houses here in our territory on this data center. And we're hopeful that there's an opportunity for the people to come out and show some support and question all of these processes. We've been at this for about just over a year now. And we've had two meetings with that O'Leary group. And we've been asking for information on this project. We want a little more detail. We want some funding. When you talk about funding and capacity, that's where all of these projects all combined and the cumulative impacts are really put us at a disadvantage. You know, the ACO process, the Alberta Consultation Office process, they provide funding $110,000 per year for us to review and do all the work. And so that could tell you on the lack of resources available for our people. But in Sturgeon, like we took a stronger stance and we hired a regulatory lawyer who's helping us with some of these challenges. And we're seeing significant movement and from the industry side, not so much on the government side. But, you know, we'll get there. We got to step up the fight and keep on fighting. So, apologies again. I could talk for days about these things. we talked a bit about the Alberta's current approach. You know, with these data centers, that's what we find. Alberta created this concierge service, and that's where this O'Leary group went. And so everything that they're working with the province of Alberta to come underneath that federal assessment. That's what we found with the impact, environmental impact assessment. You know, they're talking about creating a dam on the Smoky River up to 15 meters. And that's just under the requirement. If they go over that, then they have to apply for a federal impact assessment. And so I've met with the Minister of Environment, De Bruzen, and mentioned these things. And at the time, they only had one meeting with this group, and they required a lot of information. So, you know, that process is ongoing. We're still going to be dealing. We're still going to be pushing for that assessment. We're still going to be pushing for funding so we can do an adequate analysis on the whole process, what's required, the water, you know, because at the end of the day, like I said, with the Alberta consultation process and the funding that they allow, it is significantly not enough. So in order for us to do those things. But we've been doing our research in the meantime on some of these projects, so we're up to speed. We've got a great team in our consultation office, like I said, our legal, our regulatory team. So it's we're doing what we can with what we have. You know, and talk about what Alberta is doing for the industry and the failure of what they're doing for First Nations in our territory. We don't have that concierge service to see how we can get these things done, to get the analysis done. So it's pretty tragic, to be honest. You know, we talk about the relationship between First Nations and the governments and the understandings. You know, the treaty was signed in 1899, and the responsibility was passed on to the Government of Canada. And that was before Alberta was even a province. And so some of the challenges that we face with the provincial government is that they believe, and this was the Premier Smith's words to the Alberta Chiefs last summer, that if we want to talk treaty, we're going to have to go talk to the king. So, and that's the mindset that they have, right? So even when it comes down to consultation and free prior informed consent, they put us in a little box and think that all we're concerned about are our treaty trapping or hunting and our harvesting rights. But really at the end of the day, when we're talking water and rights, water was never discussed at the time of treaty because it was non-negotiable. And they don't have that understanding. They're trying to minimize us to just a stakeholder, and we're far from stakeholders. So I wanted to share that with you so you have a better understanding where I'm coming from when we're talking about all of these challenges and our rights. Some of these things they talk about that are treaty, really at the end of the day, there are inherent rights. And when we had that understanding of signing a treaty, that these things were going to last in perpetuity. There was one thing I wanted to get to here. I apologize. How much time we got?
Just keep going.
Yeah, so I think I pretty much covered it. I wanted to speak a little bit about that funding, the capacity funding. That's what we've been seeing throughout the whole, our entire relationship with Canada. Like I said, the general public believes that we are well taken care of, but yet we still live in poverty. We still live in overcrowding, lack of opportunities, lack of jobs. And if we lived according to our understandings, that we wouldn't have that. Share the land, share the benefits out of the lands. Sorry, I just lost my train of thought there. I think I spoke to that a little bit, but... And I just wanted to express that, like, even though that they provide that capacity funding, and when there's project-specific projects like this one, when we had a conversation about capacity funding and the analysis that we wanted to do, like, we're talking like $500,000 to do, like, the water and things to do with the environment and all those things. And the proponent had come back and said that they are just... consider them just like a startup. So they're basically starting with no money. And so, and the guy behind it is a billionaire. So that when they said that, it kind of took us as a, sure, okay. And when it comes to those that capacity funding and those asks, it's not a favor. Like, we're not asking them a favor. It's a requirement. But we can't trust the government's analysis. We can't trust their assessment. And so we have to make sure that we do our work so that we can protect our way of life for forever. You know, these water impacts are going to have so many impacts on the animals. And that's one thing that they don't take into consideration. You know, we filed an appeal on this... this project specifically, and they were asking for 24 million cubic meters of water. Like, we're talking billions of liters of water. And they approved a preliminary certificate of 6 million cubic meters of water for the Greenview Industrial Gateway. We filed an appeal on that, and we lost because the AER determined that we didn't show enough that it's going to impact our community. And so what they were looking at, again, basically put us in the box on reserve and thinking that project won't affect our nation. But where we're coming from is that those impacts on the land and the territory, you know, First Nation people have been here for millennia, and we were stewards of the land, and we still are. And so when it comes to these projects, our job as leaders in Sturgeon Lake Cree Nation is to protect our way of life. And at the time of treaty, we had an understanding that nothing was supposed to impact that way of life. Yet we see these developments in our territories. And so when we have, like I said, that study that was done by Mark Nalski, we also had a study done from one of our consultants in our firms out of all the oil and gas territory in our lands. And it was determined that there's about 90%, 95% that is utilized by the oil and gas sector. And that wasn't taken into consideration, the forestry, the mining, and the rural development. So, you know, we're talking significant cumulative impacts to our nation and our ability to go out there and do what was promised in treaty, the hunting, the gathering, the medicines. And, you know, with the, like I said, the rising cost of goods today, our people are getting more and more back living on the land, living off the land. And so when we have a development like this, that's going to have impacts on our water, the gas, even the heat generated from this facility, and the amount of area that it's going to take up. You know, our people from these lands, from my homelands, lived out there. We have people buried out there in the whole territory. And so when we're going to take this big chunk of land and use it for resource development, the impacts on the animals that we're going to harvest or we're going to fish, whether it's downstream or in the general area, like those are going to be taken away. And that's what government doesn't understand. They see this as an opportunity for them to generate revenue out of royalties or taxation or what have you. And yet that impacts our treaty. Our kids can no longer go in that territory and utilize what's promised to them. And so when we take these strong stances in whether it's against the separatists or whether it's against the resource development, it's with coming from that perspective. So I just wanted to thank you for that. I mean, communicate that to you, and again, that's our perspective, where we're coming from. You know, I wanted to I mentioned a little bit about the role of Canada. When we met with Canada on several issues, whether it's this resource development or whether it's a separatist issue, it's been very quiet from the government of Canada. When we talked to Minister De Bruyzen about this project specifically, she said that they were basically limited in scope by what they could do because of the Supreme Court of Canada. And so to me, that tells me that everything that I've seen so far with Canada is that they're falling in line with whatever Alberta wants. And we've seen that out of, I don't know if anybody's seen Premier Smith's address yesterday. I second that. And so, you know, we're going to continue to do what we can to hold governments accountable so that, you know, that our rights are protected. And we've been getting a lot of support from everybody, Albertans, all across Canada. Ever since I began on this journey, whether we're voicing concerns about resource development or what's happening in Alberta, you know, we get positive messages from folks all the way down to PEI, all across this country. So I'm grateful for that. You know, it helps. So when we talk about like where Canada is in all of this, you know, I think there are questions that we really have to ask ourselves and ask these proponents, like who benefits from these projects? Like really, what's the benefit to our people that are living in the territory if we build this project in our territory? You know, they're going to be giving up tax concessions and all of those things. And are they benefiting out of probably a handful of jobs at the end of the day? Is it worth the risk to the environment? And again, who bears the environmental burden? It's going to be the people of that territory. Who gets consulted and who gets left out? And what we've seen and heard from the province of Alberta is that they're only going to engage with people that they determine who are impacted. And we talk about that Alberta Consultation Office. They do have a map of what they determine what First Nations area and territory is. And so for us, that's a gross misrepresentation of our territory. They put us again in a little box. When I had conversations about this project specifically, we met with the O'Leary group twice. And we have serious concerns and questions. And yet when I speak to the city of Grand Prairie, the county, the MD, even the province, and yet they're all in favor of this project and support it. So that tells me that we're left out of critical information. So I couldn't understand, based on the data that we collected on what this impact is going to be, they must have done that research as well. And if they're okay with that, then that's concerning. Because like we're talking, like I said, 24 million cubic meters of water in a province that are facing drought conditions. We have our neighbors to the west of us, Fort St. John and Dawson Creek. They're talking about a pipeline. I don't know, haven't heard if it was approved or started construction, but from the Peace River to their communities because of the drought conditions. You know, it's very serious. You know, the bill, I think it was Bill 7 in Alberta, where they're going to combine the basins. You know, that has very serious impacts that are coming up. You know, we're tracking all of these things through some of our teams. I guess I want to talk about like what are Sturgeon Lake Cree Nation, what are we calling for? What are we asking? You know, we want transparent and accountable regulatory process for AI data center development because we haven't seen it. Meaningful consultation process grounding in constitutional obligations. We haven't seen that, so we're pushing for that. Adequate capacity funding to First Nations participation for independent review. Again, like I said, it's grossly inadequate. Full assessment of cumulative environmental impacts. Like I said, the amount of development in our territory is very significant. Protections of the watersheds, wildlife, culturally significant areas. Respect for treaty inherent rights before approvals move forward. That's something that's been missing and that we've been pushing for. Public transparency and meaningful public engagement. Anything less fails to meet the honor of the crown. And that's something that we've been talking about on an ongoing basis, that failure of the obligations of the crown. Alberta pushes that off and says it's not the responsibility, but yet it is. In closing, our treaties were never agreements to sacrifice the lands and waters in the name of unchecked industrial expansion. They were agreements to share the land while ensuring future generations could continue to live from it. The decisions being made today about AI infrastructure will shape our territories for decades to come. The question before all of us is simple. With this new economy, will this new economy repeat the mistakes of the past, or will governments finally choose a path rooted in respect, responsibility, transparency, and honor? From what I've seen, the answer is no. But we'll continue to push and hold them accountable as hard as we can, and we just hope that the people in our territory do the same. With that, I want to thank you very much for having me today, Drew, and thank you for the invite. I'm looking forward to the next couple of days. Naskumpnao, hi. Thank you.